100th episode, we finally got it right.
It's time for the Nerd Up Podcast, and here's your pod hosts, Guilty Wilson. Nerd
Up! Welcome to the 100th episode of the Nerd Up Podcast. Not just another episode. This is the 100th episode. This is the one that will make or break you. This is the one that's going to tell you whether or not your future you decided upon is the right one.
It'll make you cry tears of joy, happiness, and anger.
And it will not only do that, but it'll make you want to punch your neighbor. Oh, wait, that one probably shouldn't have happened. But anyway, hi, I'm Guilty Wilson, also joined by...
Eric Billingsley.
Timothy Mattson.
Isaac Thor Wilson.
And I'm telling you, if it's nothing else, it got Eric Billingsley back on the air on the Nerd Up Podcast. If that's what it takes, 100 episodes, we got him. We kind of gave Tim a hard time last time around about letting that real life thing get in the way, so Eric... How dare you let real life get in the way of a podcast?
I know. How dare I?
I know.
How'd the show go?
Yeah.
It was awesome. Yeah, it was a very special experience. I mean, it's just briefly, it was a completely bilingual American Sign Language, English language, period tell from like pre-Depression era, like 1917 to 1920 in that area. And takes place in Ware, Illinois, which we're all, even though we don't live, Tim lives in North Carolina because he's a traitor.
Yeah, exactly.
but of course, the other Tim and Gil and I all live in different parts of Illinois, but we're all in Illinois. And this takes place down in Ware, which is down near Cape Girardeau, Missouri, right next to the river. But anyway, it went over very well.
It takes place where?
In Ware.
Where?
W-A-R-E. Yes, there is a town called Ware.
Okay. And,
I know Ware.
Yep. Nowhere. Okay. What's the subject matter then?
The deaf world and the hearing world and the bridges make in between and the nature of communication and familial relationships.
Oh, wow.
So, you know. Very light, you know, dinner theater comedy type stuff.
Yeah, sure. Okay. now I understand also, Eric, just to toot your horn for you, since you might anyway, but anyway, I understand you got asked to be a director for an upcoming performance also.
Yes, I did. I had put into direct in kind of lesser known show. We already established our season, The Red Shoes. It's on the docket. The Importance of Being Earnest and Death of a Salesman. And there's one other play that I can't remember offhand right now. I put in for The Red Shoes and Earnest, and didn't put in for Death of a Salesman. But anyone who knows anything about theater, even people who don't know anything about theater, know about Death of a Salesman. And it's one of the things that, like, Dustin Hoffman is most famous for playing that part.
Yeah.
It's actually been made into a film 3 times. Well, film/television movies.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it's a very serious piece of work and a very depressing piece of work, and very challenging. So I'm a little nervous, but you know, I think I can do it off. I've got people at my disposal who are going to help me out should I need it.
Good. Well, congratulations on that. I mean, well, I'm kind of glad you got Death of a Salesman rather than Importance of Being Earnest, because after seeing Ernest Goes to Camp and then Ernest Saves Christmas, that Importance of Being Earnest has really let me down. So I'm glad you didn't get that one.
So. Yeah, I'm surprised we didn't get that movie.
Oh, man. But anyhow, congratulations on that. And basically, hey, I guess that's a nerdy progress in your life. But we're now talking about Nerd Up Podcast things that, you know, this is the 100th episode, guys. Can you believe we've been doing this? Well, maybe you not.
Yes.
100 episodes. Isaac, oh, yeah, the torture feels, I can feel it. But, you know, 100 episodes, that's a milestone when it comes to podcasting.
That's nothing to sneeze at.
No. And wow, I mean, I'm surprised we got here, or surprised I got here and put up with it. It's a little pet project of mine. Let me explain why I got into this. I basically, A friend of mine, we used to operate what we called a nerd store here in our little town of Robinson, Illinois. You know, it was Magic the Gathering. We had tournaments, you know, Friday Night Magic, and we had other tournaments go on. I sold comic books. We also sold various other nerdy things, other gaming material and stuff. And we decided we were going to do a podcast promoting the store. The place was called True Hideaway, and so we had the True Hideaway podcast. Well, after a couple of years of running the store, Sean Mitchell, who helped me start that, he moved to Florida, and we just basically gave up the store and at the same time gave up the podcast. But I was hooked by then. I was like, this podcasting thing's fun. So I said, well, you know what? I'm going to keep doing this. No matter what it takes, I'm going to create my own. And I came up with the Nerd Up podcast, mainly because here's the funny reason why the name came up. Is that I had the theme song already. A friend of mine has he does commercial and parody songs for radio stations. And he's got this company set up, and they send out all these parody things. And he did a parody song, Word Up, which is what you hear as the theme song for Nerd Up. And he did this, and I just like, man, I love that. That is so cool. It's so funny. It talked about everything nerdy. And, I mean, the whole song itself is about 2 minutes long. In fact, in the early episodes, I think I used almost the entire song as the intro. I since trimmed that back, thanks to the Independent Fest up in Indianapolis. One of the critiques they gave us on the podcast when we were nominated for an award was that your intro's way too long. I'm like, okay, fine. So I cut it back. It's now down to, I think, at the most 22 seconds long, so that's a bit better. But anyway, that Nerd Up was just so funny. I'm like, that'd be a great name for the podcast. So I started it with my nephew and Isaac, and we just kind of started talking about nerdy things. My nephew then, he kind of went off the grid for a while, Chris Wilson, who recently appeared on a couple of the podcasts we talked about. So we, you know, kind of swung into the things, creating this podcast. Well, then when Chris went off the grid, Isaac and I would do it and on occasion. And they weren't very long. They're short podcasts. And then finally, Eric, I was reading one of his blogs about some movie. I forget even which movie it was now, Eric. But I saw that
I think it's probably a TV show.
Yeah, that's
probably
right.
Probably Hannibal.
That's exactly what it was. I think it was Hannibal that you wrote on another website. You were writing about, you were doing a regular blog. I'm like, you know, that's the kind of nerdy thing we need. So I invited you, Eric. And then I think you said, hey, Tim Coker would be good. And then Tim Mattson came along and was like, oh, that would be another good one. And then we were like, wait, this is a reunion of us SIU theater grads. And so that's what became the Nerd Up podcast. All us getting back together, talking nerdy. And then, with the exception of Tim Coker, we all officially got back together in person at the Indie PopCon, the first Indie PopCon. And we actually met in person after, what, about 20 years almost?
It's been years
long. Yeah. And we said, hey, wow, we all look old now. But we enjoyed
it. You know, if you think about it, most of the content of our conversations, you could easily transplant back to the old days when we were all in college hanging out in the green room.
Oh,
our conversations back then were probably very similar to the ones we're having now.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I remember talking anime several times with Tim Coker. And Jason Jones, I remember specifically, and Kurt Gilman, who's actually been a guest on here. Let's see. And then comic books came up a few times with Tim Coker, of course. We've always talked about TV shows. Back then, here, we're going to show our age a little bit, guys. Twin Peaks was on the air.
Yeah, that was all the rage.
Yeah. So we were always talking about that some way, somehow. Mm-hmm. But yeah, and that's exactly what it is. That green room launched the Nerd Up podcast, in a sense. So, and here we are. So that, I don't know, to me, it's been a pet project, just something I love. But again, it's the same at the same time, it gives me the chance to revisit some old friends and talk about things that nobody else wants to talk about with me.
And not one of us has grown up one bit.
No, not at all. But one of the things, I brought Isaac in this, mainly because I wanted the young point of view. And he also was... He would let me know of a bunch of things coming out, especially video game-wise, et cetera. So, Isaac.
What?
Wake up. What do you think you bring into this picture? Why do you keep doing this?
I don't know. I think you've replaced me with Tim Mattson and Eric, because I don't need to be here for the video games anymore. You guys are hip.
Maybe broke a hip. I don't know.
I don't know. I've got... I guess I've got the Nintendo games going on because none of you guys seem to have the Wii U or anything.
Yeah. So what? Why do you keep doing this? I mean, other than the fact that Isaac's time to record, get in here.
Other than the fact that Dad makes you.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
I was hoping he'd say that for the fame and glory, but I guess not.
I'm getting my YouTube channel sponsored on the side of the page. That's all I really am in it for.
Ah, there we go. The cross pollination,
nepotism.
If you will. Yeah, there we go. So there we go. Okay, well,
the
that
promotion.
Makes sense. Yeah. All right. So Eric, since you were the first one I brought on here, other than Isaac, what do you consider continue to bring on to the podcast, and what has it done for you in this crazy 100 episodes?
Well, it was interesting when you invited me to come on the podcast, because I'd been blogging for here and there for a little while for the redroompodcast.com, which, as you can tell from their domain, is also a podcast. And even still, every now and then we'll talk with I'll talk with Josh or Scott, the guys that run that website and do that podcast, and every now and then they're like, oh yeah, we need to get you on for this podcast. Hasn't happened yet, but that's fine, because like I said, about that time I get a call from you or an email or something, you had suggested doing the podcast. I was like, oh, sounds fun to me. I've actually been tossing around that idea. So now I have an outlet for expressing my opinions other than ranting on Facebook.
Which you still do that,
which
too.
I still do. But at least now, you know, I can actually, you know, get instant feedback from people with as nerdy interest as I have.
All right, Tim, when you were brought into the fold, what first of all, what did you think of the ideas? Like, crap, what am I getting into? And second of all, what's it done for you? I know one thing is done for you, but I'll let you talk about it.
Yeah, I've always been really interested in podcasts. I've been an avid listener of a variety of podcasts for quite some time. I meant to actually go back. Do you remember what episode did we start on?
Wow.
When did Eric and I come in?
I don't know. I'll have to go back and look. I never even thought about looking at that.
Yeah, I meant to do that before we recorded today, and then I forgot right up until the moment we started.
I'm thinking around the 20s or 30 episodes. 20s or 30s.
Has it been that long? Yeah. Holy crap.
Man. No, 1920s.
Maybe, yeah, it feels like that way, honestly. No, it's like Eric. I relish the ability to sit down and chat with for my mates about nerdy things, and it's a great outlet for me, and I enjoy it a lot because I like hanging out with you guys and I like to talk about these things, so it's the best of both worlds, really. And it's led to me co-producing a podcast of my very own with a friend of mine, Phil Powell, who grew up in Oblong, Illinois.
Nice.
Yeah, and that's been a great experience. We've been having a lot of success.
Yeah, that's one of the things, like when you branched off and started doing your own podcast, I was like, a proud father. You're having your own child now. But
you should be. I mean, it's been an inspiration to do this many episodes with you guys, because a lot of podcasts, I've listened to quite a number of them, and a lot of them fade out or don't post after a while. They just kind of give it up and they just fade away, and it drops off after 15, 20 episodes. And to hang in there for 100 episodes, I think that's a real testament to Gil for keeping us together for that long.
It's just that Dad's stubborn and doesn't want to stop this.
I'm a glutton for punishment.
I feel it's probably a tax dodge. That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's not necessarily, you know, people think it's easy to express your opinion. To have an opinion is easy. We all have those.
Right.
But actually expressing verbally your opinion and, you know, a coherent way is not a skill that necessarily everyone has.
It's the coherent part we struggle with.
But I think that we are more coherent than some. Yeah. I've definitely heard some podcasts that I was like, you know, one or two episodes in, I was like, they're going nowhere fast.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's a difference between saying Batman v Superman sucks to Batman v Superman sucks because these guys have never read a comic. You know, that's what we try to bring into, is that difference there. Of course, yes. We'll just say it sucks anyway, but, you know, we'll actually express why. But, yeah, I mean, like I said, it's for us, for me, it's just a way to discuss things and then find out, you know, I don't like something and why I don't like it, and find out there's other people that feel the same way. It's like, oh, that's kind of cool. It's like, I'm not the only one thinking this, you know, and or the fact that I like something, somebody else doesn't like it, and having, I mean, that conversation's like, hey, now, okay, I see where you're coming from, but still, I like it because I do, and, you know, whatever. It's great no matter whether we agree or disagree or whatever the case may be. So, yeah, it's just a great way to express. So anybody listening, if you're not expressing yourself, call into the podcast sometime, and you can express yourself here. We'll let you. That's why we are, who we are, where we are, why we are. Let's start out this this podcast with some real good information here. Let's start talking about Suicide Squad. This is the first time we've gotten together after seeing the movie. Wait, Tim, have you seen the movie yet?
I plan on going maybe in another week or two.
Okay.
At some point. When my dollars don't matter.
Right, there you go. There you go, exactly.
Yeah. Because I hate giving them my money.
Right.
I really do. Because I feel like I need to see this just so I can talk intelligently about it. Sorry, yeah. I feel like I need to see it. It's like Batman versus Superman. I'll see it eventually. Because I need to be able to have my own informed opinion about it,
right,
instead of relying on others' interpretations. And it seems to me like largely that, yeah, this is just another misfire from DC that, you know, reading the behind the scenes talk about how this movie was put together, it's horrifying, you know, to have David Ayer's version of the movie and Warner Brothers' version of the movie. That they had a production company that does movie trailers put together for them. And then they screened both of them for test audiences, had pretty much the same reaction to both. And so they've decided to make one movie out of the two of them and just crammed those two cuts together. And that's what they released. And it sounds like it was a horrible idea.
Well, you know what? It did sound like that when we talked about it before seeing the movie. I was I can see where you're coming from with that, how that would do. But I'll tell you what. I think that the recut, if you will, actually made it good. Now I've explained this to Tim Coker on Facebook. So basically, I thought it was pretty good, DC wise. If Marvel had made this movie, I'd say it's like, I'm not so great. But on a DC status, it was pretty darn good. I actually enjoyed it. I'm glad they did the recuts, because I can tell you there are scenes in this movie that look like a comic book panel. And that's what I look for in a comic book movie. If you've got a scene or two that looks like, hey, that I could be right into a comic book. I mean, like we talked about the TV series Preacher. There were, throughout that whole series, there were several scenes that were like, that's 100% from the comic book. But of course it wasn't from the comic book because they made their own story. But anyway, you know what I mean? It looks like it's from, and this one, they did that. In fact, when they introduced each one of the characters, they had this little, and I'm trying to think of the writer who used to do this. I want to say Jeff Johns maybe, but there was some writer that,
well, I can explain it in a way that you'd understand. You know how in Borderlands, every character that pops up has the little catchphrase and then they have the name?
Yeah.
It's basically like that, but for every Suicide Squad member.
Little vignettes for each character.
And there's a great, not quite origin story, but a little glimpse about who they are and why they're doing what they do. But
not for all of them.
No, there's like two or three of them There's like two or three that didn't get that treatment. Slipknot's one of them, but then again, there's a reason behind that one. I don't want to spoil it. But yeah, they got a nice little vignette thing that where it showed their name, what they did, their powers, and then it would like say something like likes candy or, you know, some silly little thing that was kind of fun. It was thrown in there. Not every one of them had that little happy moment, but, you know. But I thought that was really creative, really nicely done, because it said, okay, remember, this is a comic book movie. Okay, here's the character, and then get on with it. And they didn't dwell on it. And each character got a little backstory, and it really worked nice. The Joker and Harley Quinn, I was impressed with Jared Leto's portrayal of the Joker. I was totally surprised by it because I was prepared not to like this. Now, I will complain that stupid grill that they had him wearing on his teeth kept you from understanding about 80% of what he was saying. And I hated that. And I don't think that was the actor's fault. I think it was, wear this, it's going to look cool. aspect of it. He could have gone without that grill. And I like the fact, I don't know if they recut this or what, but the tattoo damage was kind of small. You almost didn't even see it. I had to actually have to look for that little tattoo. So it's like, okay, they shrunk that.
I didn't even notice it until you said something about it, honestly.
Yeah, it looks like they shrunk it in the post or something. I don't know, but I was like, okay, it looks like they took the fans' advice and said, that's not a great idea. So it wasn't as big as it was in the pictures on the posters they released. So, you know, I was prepared to not like that Jared Leto, but he brought a side to the Joker that, okay, I can work with this Joker. This Joker can be in an upcoming DC movie and work. Get rid of that stupid grill, though. I mean, that was, to me, that just ruined it all. There were several different aspects of his character that came about. The relationship between Harley and the Joker was awesome. It was like, the Joker, you know, well, actually, in the animated series, he just basically uses Harley Quinn, whenever he needs something, he talks nice to her. But in some of the comics, they've actually got a relationship going on. And there was a moment where, in the film, where it's like, you know, he might accidentally love her a little bit. It's like, there might be, but not quite. And it's like, the way they did that, it worked. Because it made sense for the characters. But it's just like one little bitty tease, you know. They didn't play on that at all. It's just the tease was there. And it's like, okay, I think I can deal with that. But again, I was prepared to hate this, but I walked out saying, you know, I kind of like that. That wasn't too bad.
That's kind of the same attitude that I went into the theater with, was that I really, considering DC's track record, or Warner Brothers' track record with comic book properties, it's at this point, it's like, okay, if you can make me enjoy myself for 5 or 10 minutes out of this entire movie, you've probably outdone everything you've done the last 3 movies you've released. I haven't seen Batman versus Superman, although I just rented it, so I'm going to watch it this weekend. But I know it's going to be a miserable experience, and because yeah. I could tell that from the trailer. It's going to be a slog, but like Tim Mattson said, I want to be able to form my own opinion about it.
Right.
Now, I'd read a little bit about Suicide Squad, and none of it good, although I did hear that there were some, you know, vociferous fans that were trying to get, I can't remember exactly what it was. They were trying to get, like, the Rotten Tomatoes score revised or something crazy like that.
They were asking for it to be shut down.
Yeah, they were asking for a full shutdown, yeah.
Well, that's crazy.
Yeah. Well, yeah. You know, that is. I mean, but I will agree on one aspect, is I think Rotten Tomatoes may have got it wrong. They gave it, I think it was a 27% was the final critics, and I think it was better than that. It was very entertaining. In fact, here's the thing. Will Smith, I am so sick of Will Smith. He's the same character in every freaking movie he's done ever since Independence Day, for sure. Even Pursuit of Happiness was like, that's still Will Smith, you know. There were points. He's charming. He's cute. He's witty. I'm tired of that. Well, as Deadshot, he was still charming, cute, witty, but Will Smith. But there were also moments in that I was like, dude, you're Deadshot.
Well, there's a darkness to the character that I've not really seen him do before.
Yeah.
You're not going to, I mean, you know, he's still Will Smith. No one's going to mistake him for not being Will Smith.
Right.
He's got a very distinctive voice, and even with a shaved head and a beard, it's still obviously Will Smith. But this was a bit more of a departure and more of a challenge, I think, for him than what I've seen him do for a long time.
Yeah.
And yeah, I haven't been able to stand watching Will Smith in a movie for quite some time, but I actually enjoyed his character in this, and I enjoyed, of course, Margot Robbie as Harley Quinn. Who this was really her movie, although I'm curious, because you were talking Tim talking about the two different versions of the film that was made, and they kind of edited together a hybrid of both. I could see how a version of this film would not have Harley Quinn featured so prominently.
Yeah, probably.
In fact, I would almost be willing to bet that in the original script she probably wasn't, and I think that she tested so well with audiences that they put as much footage back in the film of her as they could, and by effect basically made her a central character, if not the central character of the story.
I can't imagine them greenlighting this without putting Harley Quinn right at the center, because the bean counters have got to look at her and go, yeah, this is, people are going to want to come see this because of her. I can't imagine them there ever being a time when Harley Quinn is not front and center in this film.
Yeah, but can you ever imagine a time?
But I have to wonder. I have to wonder if they maybe added it and cushioned it out a little bit.
Maybe. That's entirely possible because they did spend $10 million in quite a number of days doing reshoots to make it lighter and more entertaining.
Well, can you ever imagine a DC universe where the movies, we say, please don't put Superman in it? I mean, come on. So, yeah, I don't know.
It's just a real downer to, I hate not wanting Superman in a film.
I know. So, yeah. Well, Batman is in this film. He makes a few appearances in Suicide Squad, and actually really well-done appearances. Short enough to make you want more, actually. But here's the thing. Harley Quinn is getting her own movie treatment. I want to see how that goes. I wonder what they're going to do with that.
If they're having Margot Robbie in that part, I'll go see it.
Oh, me too.
She made the film a lot. A big part of the reason I enjoyed the film was her.
Yep.
And she really, you know, makes the character live and breathe. And she's interesting. I wanted to know what she would do next or what she would do in any given situation because she's so unpredictable whether she's going to go left or right depending on the circumstances.
All the way to the end too. You had no idea. She is supposed to be in the movie, and that's of course any way other than that it would be a failure. But the thing with her, well, actually, she took the center of the film, I would say 100%. Will Smith took the second, but there's one scene especially. It's the scene where they get them all together, getting ready to fly them into Central City, and they got them all in the tarmac there, and they said, here's your stuff, get dressed, we're leaving. And so they give everybody their suitcases, so to speak, and they start unpacking, putting, like, Will Smith looks at the Deadshot mask, puts that in, you know. Well, Harley Quinn, you know, she's dressed in the prison orange jumpsuit, and, you know, they're playing the cool music behind it, and everybody's getting dressed and ready. And then they show Harley Quinn putting the shirt back on after she's gotten completely naked and gotten completely dressed, and then she, like, turns around, everybody's stopped in their tracks. She goes, what? That's like the best scene ever because it's like, you know, they don't show anything. They just show her opening up her suitcase. She even opens up the original onesie that she wore, you know, from the animated series. It looks like she might be putting that on. But anyway, she gets dressed, and then you realize she just took all of her clothes off to get these clothes on. You know, that's what she is. She didn't care. She's like, what? So it was perfect.
I've seen some, you know, some bits and pieces of this is – this film is it's a heist film. It really is.
Yeah.
At its heart, it's a heist film. And it's very much in the tradition of like Dirty Dozen of, you know, like the, you know, the disreputable, you know, borderline bad guys that, you know, are expendable and, you know, sending them to do a job that they probably won't come back from just because someone's got to do it. I mean, that all applies to this film. And and in that framework, I really think that it works. I mean, yes, I would have liked to have seen a little more character development with some of the other characters. And I mean, like Croc and some of the other characters really got short shrifted, you know, but I mean, that's the thing when you have so many characters in a film, it's really difficult to make a film where everyone has an even part of the story.
True.
Even the first Avengers, really, it's not, you can't say that it was evenly distributed. I mean, Iron Man was really kind of, you know, front and center, and then everyone else kind of filed in behind him.
Yeah.
Same thing here. I was curious about some of the other characters as well.
The reason that worked, though, is because it's a slow and steady climb. They didn't just jump right in and throw all the Avengers in front of you and go, okay, now we got to do a mini origin for every one of these so you guys know where they're all coming from, and then we're going to do the movie. No, it's built up over time. DC throws all these characters out there in the Suicide Squad and has to scramble to get the audience up to pace, and so they waste a lot of time. Maybe not a lot of time, but it's just like a lot of superhero stories have this problem where they try to do too much in one film. So many times, especially like some of the Spider-Man films with the multiple villains, you can't give time to all of them because you're trying to do their origin and set up their motivation and their relationships and all that. And people are going to get short shrift. Whereas with the Marvel films, they spend an appropriate amount of time with the characters over time, getting the audience used to them and getting them to know them. Whereas, you know, in the Avengers film, a couple of the characters got less screen time. Well, the next Avengers film, they got more screen time. So,
right. Yeah.
And I'm curious to see where they go with this. And you're right. But here's the way that they've entered. This is so different from anything that Marvel has done. It might work. I don't know where they're going to go from here. But for this single film on its own, if there's never any spinoffs or sequels done, this film on its own was, I think, a success. It was entertaining. It was fun. And as I was saying to Gil before we started the podcast, in some ways, I thought that they tried almost too hard to make some of the characters likable.
Yeah.
And here's the thing, because we haven't seen any of these characters other than the Joker before,
Joker before.
Right, exactly. And, you know, and I'm talking purely from a cinematic viewpoint, not, you know, let's forget about the comic history of all these characters, because I'm really ignorant when it comes to the most of those characters' history. So this may have been totally, you know, blasphemy to DC fans everywhere, but to me, just on judging it on its own merits, I thought that it was done well. And the fact that they don't have origin stories established for these characters yet made it a little easier to root for them, because yeah. I was talking to my friend Kenny, who I saw the film with afterwards, and I was like, you know what, if say Harley Quinn and some of the other characters had a movie or been the villain in you know, someone else's movie previous to this, it would probably be very hard to be able to bring them far enough to center so that the audience could identify with them.
Right.
But since we've not seen any of these characters before, it's not as hard of a job. Now, if they do a Harley Quinn movie, or if she shows up as the villain in a future film, you know, the Suicide Squad Part 2 might be a very different affair. But
yeah.
Anyway, that's what I thought.
Yeah. Well, Isaac, you're the youth in the group. What did you think of Suicide Squad? I mean, what did you bring out of it?
I mean, in my opinion, I think other than Katana and what's his name, Slipknot.
Yeah.
Other than those two, I personally think the rest of the heroes got as much screen time as they needed, because they all had their good moments. Like even Captain Boomerang,
yeah,
who you didn't see much of, he had plenty of hilarious moments. And let's see, Killer Croc had the moment where he was beating up all of those
Which Enchantress's creations.
Harley Quinn and Deadshot had most of the movie, and then El Diablo had the entire end of the movie. He was in my opinion, the best part of the entire movie.
He was their wild card that they were able to pull out at the last minute.
Yeah.
Yeah, 100%.
Now, I gotta say, though, now that you bring it up, you know, to be fair in my evaluation, the bad guy was, you know, or the bad girl or whatever, the villain was in the story was pretty forgettable and pretty generic.
Yeah.
You know, there was nothing special about that at all. Just another CGI creation. The story itself is not, you know, I mean, it's very, very basic.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, it's not going to win any awards for that, for sure. No. But like I said, as a heist film, though, it works. And, you know, it's really character driven. And I really liked following these characters and seeing how they would behave in these various situations. One other person I wanted to bring up is Joel Kinnaman. I've been a fan of his since watching the Killing on AMC, which was a remake of a Swedish or Swiss or something like that, or Danish series overseas. And he was very, very good in that role. And I've seen him in a few things since then. First and foremost, he was RoboCop in the remake. Now, the RoboCop
was that him?
Remake,
I didn't realize he was RoboCop. Yeah. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. He does a really good job in this character. I mean, I recognized his voice before I recognized his face, because he's actually put on some years and looks a little bit different now.
Yeah. Colonel Rick Flagg.
But that's definitely him. Yep. And I liked RoboCop. It was not. It doesn't compare to the original. I didn't expect it would, but kind of like Suicide Squad, when I actually sat down and watched it, even against my better nature, I wound up enjoying it. And I was like, okay, for what it is, I liked it.
I think what's going to be telling is the box office for this, because I did doing a little looking up here right now, and Batman versus Superman fell off the map when it came to the box office on the second weekend.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And it dropped, 81%.
Yeah.
it looks like from one Friday to the next, it dropped 81%. Suicide Squad dropped 79%.
Really?
Yeah. Huh. So I think it's, again, I think it's on the trajectory of Batman versus Superman to be another disappointment. I know that they were thrilled to pieces that it made so much money on opening weekend.
Yeah, it broke all sorts of records on the opening weekend, but that doesn't mean anything.
Yeah, it did. Well, you're right. I mean, it doesn't mean much if it doesn't have legs, if it's not going to stay and continue to make money over time. I mean, I'm curious. I'll be curious to see what the weekend totals are. I mean, it's only midday Saturday.
Right.
But
opening Friday,
it made $64 million. Almost $65 million. And the second Friday, it was $13 million.
Interesting.
But honestly, Tim, I think that the drop in box office has more to do with the bad reviews and the word of mouth that's gotten out than it does the actual quality of the film. The film is much better than what people have been giving it credit for, and that's why I've been kind of perplexed. I was like, have you seen the last two or three DC movies? This is so far superior to those. Yeah.
This is a real comic book.
The ironic thing is that this is such a light film in comparison.
Oh yeah,
to the Superman and Batman, Superman. So like, you know, the heroes, the actual superhero movies, are drudgery and just sheer depression. And the supervillain films are fun and light, and you know, a heist film and something to take your family to. It's like what?
Yeah,
what,
exactly.
You know, what universe is this?
It's topsy turvy. It's indeed.
Well, you know, that's the thing about this is that they finally get it right. And then looking at the trailer for the Justice League movie, you're starting to say, okay, it looks like they're paying attention to more of the source material than they have with the first two Superman horrible things that they've done. And I hate even saying those things. I mean, I hate saying that the Superman movie was horrible because I want it to be good. I mean, it's Superman.
Well, sure.
It's you know, this is our comic books, and there's no reason why they should be bad because everybody's a fan. But here, like I said, I walked out of that theater and I talked to the theater employees who, the same thing with Batman versus Superman, they said, I walked out of that theater and was like, man, that was horrible. And they're saying, yeah, it's pretty depressing for a superhero movie. I said, yeah. And so I walked out of the theater with this one. They said, it wasn't that great. You know, and I was like, well, yeah, I guess compared it to Batman Superman, it is great. But on its own, it's good. I mean, I'm not going to praise this thing saying it's freaking great, but I will praise it in the DC universe that it could be. But at the same time, it's like they can still do better, but they're on the right track. I think that's the way to look at it. They're on the right track from this point.
This was
forward.
The first step in the right direction that I've seen from them in a while.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. But at the rate that they're traveling, it's going to take six movies before they get something that we're going to really like.
Well, you're probably right.
I mean, that's the depressing thing is we're going to have a half dozen movies that we're like, weren't terrible.
Yeah. Well, this one I think was more than just.
It didn't make me want to scoop my eyes out. Sure.
Well, I think this one's more than that, though. I think really when you see it, you're like, you know what? I know for a fact I had fun. I saw it in 3D the first night with Isaac, and it was fun. I said, you know what? I can't believe it. So I went back and saw it a second time because it was so much as like, I can't believe it. So I took my nephew, Chris, who, you know, we all know, helped me start the podcast. Anyway, I took him the second time, and we both came out and were like, really, that was pretty good, you know? In fact, that's one of the things I told people. Why are you seeing it again? I said, because I got to make sure that what I saw was right. I mean, I can't believe that. I was like, that's just...
I mean, I was literally sitting there in the theater conscious of, like, thinking, okay, it's been good so far. It's going to fall apart any second now.
When's it going to suck?
Any second now, it's just going to completely implode. And it never really did.
No, uh-uh. And like Isaac, you said El Diablo was your favorite throughout. Yeah, when he came in at the end, it's like, holy cow, that is awesome. You know, that's from a comic book right there. I mean, like he said, El Diablo took it. But yeah, all the way through the very end of that movie.
I've also got to say, for like movies that get bad reviews from critics, I always have to tell myself, don't get placeboed by the critics. Don't think it's bad just because they think it's bad. And for Suicide Squad, I didn't even have to do that because I just thought it was I thought it was good. I wasn't even thinking about the critics' reviews on it.
Yeah.
When I was watching it.
On the soundtrack.
Great.
The soundtrack helps too.
The soundtrack is really good.
I'll tell you
I
what.
I thought that they They took a few notes from Guardians of the Galaxy.
Oh, heck yeah. Heck yeah.
They didn't take notes. They stole their playbook.
Well, they did use Spirit in the Sky, you know, that Guardians used in the trailer but didn't use in the movie. So they said, okay, we'll use this. You didn't use it. But no, I'll tell you what. If that was part of the recut, that was genius, because that soundtrack really made the difference in a lot of those scenes. Especially the scenes where they go through each one and each one has their own song. Oh my gosh, that really made that scene so much better. So yeah, I think they stole it from Guardians. We all know that, but I'm glad they did, because that really made it. I want this soundtrack,
especially the Eminem music whenever they were all getting their gear ready.
Eminem.
That was great.
Yeah. When that came on, I was like, "Is that Eminem?"
Yeah. Was it Without Me? Is that the song? Yeah, okay, yeah, Without Me.
I know that because that's the only Eminem song I have on my iPod, so.
So, but yeah.
Oh, this young generation. I remember the days of Marshall Mathers.
Well, I'll tell you what, the impressive part on Isaac's iPod, he's got the stuff like Bohemian Rhapsody, Spirit in the Sky.
I was thinking throughout the entire movie, I've got like half of these songs on my iPod already.
Yeah, he's got the classic rock ones on there, and Eminem. So, yeah, but yeah, that, I think if that was part of the recut, that was genius, because it really did make a difference. Soundtrack, like we talked about that about Guardians, how that soundtrack was really phenomenal. Now, the thing is with Guardians, they didn't need the soundtrack to be phenomenal. It was just an extra bonus we got. But this one, I think it helped it. Okay, we can run this in the dirt all we wanted to. Tim, I want you to eventually see this thing and let us know what you thought.
I do want to see it. I'm trying to keep, my expectations are nowhere. They're not even up to low. They're pretty much.
Same here.
I'm expecting this to be dog crap. I mean, to be honest.
That's what I walked
and
in.
So if it's not, I will be incredibly surprised because, you know, reading. I don't let critics make up my mind about a film, but if there are salient points about a film where it falls apart, I do take that into account and go, yeah, that's not good. But just because you say something's bad doesn't necessarily mean it's bad. Right. If you have specific reasons and examples where the film doesn't work, okay, I can see that. And I have not read much that's good about this film, to be honest. So I will be checking it out, and I will try to keep an open mind.
Yeah. We'll
see.
You got to ignore anything you've read about it before and just say, hey, and actually go in. Like I went in totally expecting dog crap. I went in saying, yeah, all right, we're going to go see this, but, you know, whatever. I went in and I'm like, you know what? I'm going to Hot Topics and buying me that Harley Quinn shirt now. Because I was impressed. I mean, I will never say it was one of the greatest ever, though.
Please don't buy that Harley Quinn shirt.
That is one of the most frightening thoughts I've ever had.
Well, to put it into some perspective, I still haven't seen the new Star Trek movie. Oh. Now, you guys know me. I love Star Trek, and I'm dying to go see it. In fact, I probably will tonight if I can motivate my butt off the couch to go do it. But I was going to go see it last weekend, and my friend Kenny, he's like, I've already seen Star Trek. It's good, but I want to go see Suicide Squad. Since he called me, I couldn't insist on Star Trek, especially since he'd already seen it.
Right.
So I was like, okay, but it's going to suck. I've read all the nothing but good things about it, and I went in. I mean, really, just like I was ready to just like at the end of the movie, see it. I could have seen Star Trek. Yeah. I came to see this instead. I was totally prepared for that. By the end of the movie, I was like, you know what? I'm glad I came to see this. This is good.
Yeah. That same feeling I had. And here's the thing. When you do see Star Trek, now you liked the first two a little bit, didn't you, Eric?
I do. I admit that, you know, Tim and our two Tims made very, you know, valid points and backed up their arguments of why they dislike those. And I can't argue with that. The both films have major problems, and I totally wish that they would have gone through with part two. And even J.J. Abrams has said in retrospect that, you know, and trying to push the Star Trek II references into the second movie was a mistake.
Yeah.
It would have been so much better if they just not tried to do any of the con stuff.
Yeah.
Well, that's what they do with this second movie.
Yeah, this one right here, exactly. One should have been it. Yeah, you're absolutely right, Tim. If this one was their second movie, that were to change the minds of a lot of fans. This movie here, I thought this actually, I think this should have been the only one. The other two shouldn't have been made at all. This one should have been the only one made.
I don't know. I don't know if I'd go that far. I feel like the first one needed to be made. I just think it should have been made better. But
true.
I think the first one, you really do kind of have to pay homage or lip service or fan service or whatever you want to call it. You have to acknowledge the past with that first movie. You can't just come in and pretend like Chris Pine has always been James C. Kirk and there's never been one before him. And
That would totally be the wrong way to do it.
Yeah, I mean, that would be totally wrong. They had to do that. They should have just done a better job at it. And the second move, the second one is best left not mentioned.
Exactly.
Because it's just really, it's a terrible film.
Yeah.
And really, if you just pretend that that doesn't exist, this is actually a really acceptable second film.
Exactly.
I would still manage my expectations a bit, Eric, because it's not great, but it is solidly good.
But I mean, I've heard from people like you and Tim Coker and a lot of other people who, you know, made no qualms about not liking at least the last one, if not the first two altogether, that have said, you know what, this one's not too bad. So that's encouraging. And it's at least got my curiosity up. So I'm like, well, okay, what are they doing different in this? I know this is the first movie of the actual 5-year mission. So this is when the Star Trek actually begins.
Yeah.
And I've always told people that were, you know, that were harsh on the film. I was like, well, it's building. This is all kind of a preamble. It's all building up to the kickoff of that mission. I think maybe they meandered a little too much. They may have been able to put, you know, what they wanted to cover in both those first two films into one film and maybe should have. And then led directly into this. But like I said, I'm hopefully going to get to go see it tonight. And my curiosity is getting the best of me. And as much as I hate schlepping out to the theater and putting up with assholes and cell phones and all that, I'll have to do it for Star Trek.
You know, that's one thing Isaac and I have got just I think we were extremely lucky in that we've got the Eagle Theater here in town that shout out to Eagle Theater. But you know what?
It's also just that it's a small town.
A small town probably a lot too, but we don't have that problem with assholes in the theater. We know most of the people turn off their phones because right before the movie comes on there's a hey, turn off your cell phone. And you know, you don't have that. You don't have people talking. However, I will say during the second time I saw Suicide Squad, there is a family came and sat next to me. The theater was crowded. Sat next to me. The woman had an injury, and she had her arm in a sling, and she had like an ice pack. And all through the movie, that ice pack was, you know, like crinkling cellophane through the whole movie. And I so badly said, "You want me to break the other arm? Shut up." But and they brought like an 8-year-old kid, and he was, you know, it was at first it got annoying because he was asking questions. But when each of the theme songs came on, he was singing along with those songs in Suicide Squad, and I'm like, that's kind of charming. Wow. Even the Eminem. So,
oh boy.
And his dad was a huge comic book fan, you could tell. He was wearing, I think it was a Flash or Green Lantern shirt, one of those classic Flash or Green Lantern t-shirts. I'm like, okay, that's a good comic book fan right there. So I kind of forgave him, and her with her broken arm, okay, I can understand. But that's like the worst experience I've ever had in a theater at Eagle Theater. I mean, they don't have, again, maybe it is just a small town aspect, but I don't know. I have not run into those jerks with the cell phones during the show, turning it on and lighting up, blinding me and talking.
Well, as a side note, I think it should be made like a federal law prohibiting like any candy with crinkly cellophane in any theater, because that just drives me up the wall.
Yes.
Crinkle, 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 crinkle.
There's a skit with Mr. Bean in a church and the candy thing, and I crack up every time I see that because it reminds me of people in theater. And he's sitting there opening it, and it's even louder than expected, but I love it. But yeah, I think you're right. That should be a law. Let's enforce that. So. All right, well, let's talk. What else do you guys want to talk about?
Luke Cage.
There we go. That's trailer. Exactly right. Yes, Luke Cage. The trailer
I mean, I love the character when he was on Jessica Jones, and I love Jessica Jones. I love everything. I was hoping that to actually get a second season of Jessica Jones before they do the, Defenders? The Defenders.
Yep.
But it doesn't look like we're going to get it. But that's fine. As long as they do another season down the road, I really hope they do another season of Jessica Jones. But Luke Cage in that show was really, it was very much from her perspective. So you only got to know as much of Luke Cage as she, you know, as she had access to. But this trailer, I mean, this is like, you know, downtown Harlem.
Yep.
You know, there's no mistaking. This is going to be an urban story. And I mean, I've not read any Luke Cage comics, but I really want to after, you know, being introduced to the character in the series.
Mm-hmm.
But the trailer just looks really kind of down and dirty, pool, no punches. You know, this is the way it is. This is the way life is in these neighborhoods. Not trying to you know, whitewash anything. I mean, I don't know if that's the way the comic is, but I hope so.
Mm. Well, you know, I have never read any standalone comic of his. I've always seen him as a team up somewhere. But one thing that got me with this trailer is when he comes out of this, I don't know what it is, some kind of machinery. It might be an origin story. I don't know. But he comes out wearing those arm braces, and he's got that headband on. See, that's a Luke Cage from the early comics, the 70s and 80s. He's got these braces and the headband. I'm like, holy cow, they got that? And then you see, okay, they're telling you how he had those and why he had those. So it's like, cool that he's not going to wear those. But in the comics, when you saw that, you knew him. You know, he was ready to whoop some butt. So, but yeah, I like the little nod to that. But yeah, like I said, I've never read a standalone Luke Cage. But this right here, like I think, like you, it's got me interested in the character. I might want to go back and read some old Luke Cage because
there's actually a good series right now. There's a new Power Man and Iron Fist comic right now being drawn by a South Carolinian artist, Sanford Green.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really neat. I really recommend it. It's pretty accessible, especially if you're not familiar with the character. And the art it's very expressive and kind of reminiscent of like graffiti art a bit. Oh, wow. Yeah. I think. I really think it's cool.
Okay. Yeah, you know what? You brought that up before, and I looked up the artwork, and I remember saying, that's intriguing. Yeah.
It is pretty intriguing, yeah.
The series, I mean, they're getting ready for the Defenders, and even more so, here's the thing, we're getting ready to have the Defenders. Doctor Strange was a member of the Defenders. That movie's coming out in November. I saw a posting somewhere where they listed the Infinity Wars Part 1 and 2, and they listed all the actors involved. Looks like they're pulling in the actors from the Netflix TV world.
Really?
That's what that listing of all the actors in Infinity Wars showed: Jessica Jones, Daredevil, Luke Cage, and the actors, you know, Charlie Cox, etc. You know, it showed them. I'm like, that's genius.
I'm so glad. I mean, I've been hoping they would do that, although I understood why they may make the decision not to go that way.
Right.
But I mean, I have gotten to the point now, I look more forward to a new Marvel series on Netflix than a new Marvel movies.
Right.
Because you get so much more of the character.
You get an 8-hour movie.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, you get a real deep dive into the character and their world. It's really nice.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And Luke Cage, I know they're going to do it right, too. So
this is just going to make Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. look even more superfluous than it already is.
I think it is getting to that point. I never hear people talking about it anymore.
Oh, man. It's like the mole on the ass of the Marvel body.
Well,
it's just really pointless and kind of ugly, and nobody really wants to talk about it.
Well, here's the thing. On that listing of actors I saw, Clark Gregg was listed, but I didn't see anyone else from the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. on that list.
So, you'll never see those people in a
proper
film. I remember them saying or reading somewhere that Clark Gregg at some point is going to reappear because everyone still thinks he's dead. And, you know, that's... So I'm looking forward to that. I mean, I love Clark Gregg. He's a great actor and he's great in the part. So, course, you know, he started off in the movies, not in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. So,
right.
Well, he was responsible to a large degree of all the connective tissue that brought all the heroes together.
Yeah,
I thought, you know, that showed a lot of foresight by screenwriters and the Marvel executives that put this whole thing together. To tap an actor like Clark Gregg, who has a lot of charisma, to really be the backbone and the heart of that team.
Yeah.
The other thing I just wanted to mention as well, did you notice that there is no longer a Avengers Infinity War Part 2?
No.
It's only one film now.
Oh, is it? Okay.
They've removed the Infinity Wars Part 2 subtitle from the third Avengers film.
Okay.
And they've ditched the part one part. So okay. The next Avengers film is the Infinity War, and then the third one is a mystery right now.
Okay. Well, I know that they're going to bring in everyone from the Guardians of the Galaxy, Avengers, TV, I mean, or Netflix, I should say, Netflix. So this is going to be an interesting conglomeration. Now, the next thing after, I mean, Luke Cage, here's the deal. Luke Cage is going to be released on Netflix. We're going to pretty much binge watch this. I'm going to try to spread it out, but we'll be watching this. And then next thing, Iron Fist. And then the Defenders. I'm like,
yeah.
It's like, come on. It's like, just, I'm almost happy that they load them all at the same time. But at the same time, I want to think, you know, I would like to spread this out so that it's not so far in between each one.
Well, don't forget there's a third season of Daredevil as
well. Oh, yeah, that's right. That's another one, see? Oh, well, we'll get our feeding. But, yeah, Luke Cage looks phenomenal.
Tim Coker got me because I was really liking when I was reading the Civil War comic books, there was a New Avengers with Luke Cage and Jessica Jones. And I really enjoyed that part of the story. In fact, that was one of the most enjoyable parts was seeing how it was affecting them, because they had a very different take on the whole Civil War registration thing than everyone else did. And they made some really good points. And there's a confrontation in the comic between Tony Stark and Luke Cage where Luke just reads in the Riot Act and it's like starts bringing up, you know, Mississippi 1959 and, you know, all these other references. And yeah. Of course, Tony's like, no, that's not what this is at all. But it really is, just in a different guise, you know.
Yeah.
So anyway, Tim got me to buy a bunch of Daredevil comics on Comixology when they were having a sale a little while back. So I've got a ton of Daredevil to catch up with.
Well, see, there's always that huge, vast plethora, endless mire of old comic books that you can always get into once you start getting interested. And let me tell you, once you start falling in that pit, Eric, it's hard to get out.
Yeah, because I need something else to spend my money
right.
on.
Right, right.
And that, your time.
And yeah, exactly, and the time.
Exactly.
So, well, all right, guys, you know what? We've been on here recording the 100th episode for quite a while now. I think it's time to call an end to the 100th episode. 100!
Are you going to do a counter how many times you said the word 100 in this episode?
No. I don't know if you've listened back to the episode where we reviewed Batman v Superman, but every time we took a dump on it, there was a sound effect I threw in, and I think it got up to like 25, so just let you know. But I won't do it on this one. So it won't be a ding every time I say 100.
We'll have to create a Nerd Up podcast drinking game.
Yeah, I know, right? Listen to this one.
You could kill somebody with that.
We meant drinking ginger ale, you know.
Yeah.
Drink every episode that I ask Tim Coker to talk about Steven Universe.
Yeah. All right, here's the deal. I just heard thunder rolling outside my window, so I think that's a good time to call an end to the podcast. Who knows what's going to happen electrical-wise. So, all right, guys, thanks for joining me. And if nothing else, thanks for joining me on the podcast, all these episodes. You've made this more fun, more exciting. Anything you guys like to say in closing here?
Thanks for inviting me to be part of it. It's been a great outlet for discussing this stuff that with people that I never get to see anymore.
I'm still waiting on my paycheck.
It's in the mail, Tim. It's in the mail. I might have not sealed the envelope, I think. But if you get the envelope and it's empty, let me know. I'll remail it.
Oh, okay. All right.
So, all right. Here's the deal, guys. Once again, follow us on Twitter at NerdUpPodcast. Check out our page, NerdUpPodcast.com. Go to Facebook. We're on Facebook. Buy our T-shirts. You can get those from the NerdUpPodcast.com. You look good wearing those things, let me tell you. So, in the meantime, I'm Gil T. Wilson. You can reach me at Gil Wilson.
I'm Eric Billingsley. You can reach me on Twitter at Eric Bill.
I'm Tim Matson. You can find me at Tim Gone Mad.
And wait, hold it. And what's the address for your podcast?
You can also find us. We're the Two Men Podcast, but you have to use the men is an abbreviation. It's TWOM.E.N. Podcast.
Okay. All right.
You can find that on your podcast service of choice.
I'm Isaac Wilson. You can reach me on YouTube at there's no at. That's a lie. That's Twitter. You can find my channel. It's EbilBacon88.
As we say at the end of every podcast,
stay nerdy.